Hi, this is Ananda, president of the Hare Krishna community near Washington, D.C. What follows is a Sunday talk recorded at our temple. Every Sunday, we invite the public for meditation, a talk, and a vegetarian lunch. We'd love for you to join us. More information is available at isconofdc.org. That's ISKCON of DC.org. Thanks, and I hope you enjoy the talk.
Well, we have many intriguing topics at the Sunday open house. Ananda, Vrindavan, and her husband, Raj Vihari, have conjured up many fascinating topics for us to hear and think about. Focus, perspectives on bhakti, one and different, so many interesting topics. So Ananda decided to give me this topic of failure, and I'm just the right person. So Ananda thought I was the right person to talk about failure. And she's right, because I fail all the time, and I've failed so many times. But when you look at our world, our fast-paced, passionate world, there's so many books, wonderful books about success, how to succeed in business and IT and this and that and the other thing, personal relationships. But we don't see books on failure, because nobody would buy them, right? I mean, maybe someone could write a book on failure and it could be in the humor section of a bookstore, right? It would be funny, you know, how to fail. But I looked at Webster's dictionary, and there was sort of what I found to be an insufficient definition of failure. It said lack of success, which is okay, so let's unpack it. Let's try to unpack it a little bit more. I wanted to tell you that I've been thinking about this topic, and I heard an interview with someone named David Blaine. I heard this on NPR. Turned on NPR. Here I am thinking about failure. Turn on NPR, and there's an interview with this young man named David Blaine. He holds the world's record for staying underwater without oxygen for 7 minutes and 3 seconds. He did that on Oprah with, you know, television witnesses. And he started life. He was the son of a single mom, born in Brooklyn, New York. He was born with his feet pointing inward. So just in order to learn to walk properly, he had to really fight. And he really had to struggle, and he exercised, and he did so many things, and he was really kind of just fighting to succeed all his life. So his idol was Houdini, the great magician and contortionist. He studied Houdini and studied the techniques, and he became a magician. And so he holds the world record for staying underwater. I think Houdini's record was 6 minutes and something. But so this interviewer on NPR asked him, Are you ever afraid of failure? Because in what he does, failure would mean death, right? The interviewer said, are you ever afraid of failure? And without missing a beat, this young man, David Blaine, said, failure is the most important thing I do. It was so interesting. Failure is the most important thing I do. So I want to ask you, all of you, why? What's your opinion on that? Why, we have this story, why is failure the most important thing that he does? Yes?
We learn what doesn't work.
We learn what doesn't work. Yes, Sarah?
It humbles us.
It humbles us. Yes?
We learn how to adapt.
We learn how to adapt.
Yeah.
Right. Yes?
It always to start something new.
Failure is always to start something new. So, yeah, failure. It teaches us values. We learn character, right? Builds our character, yes.
A step toward success.
It's a step toward success. Very good. Very good, yes.
It makes us do things more wholeheartedly.
Very good. It makes us do things more wholeheartedly. Thank you for these great answers. So, yeah, I was thinking along these lines. It helps us build self-control, endurance, character, determination, even wisdom, right? So knowing how to fail is a great secret of success. And there's no learning without failure, and there's no failure without learning. If you look at our Ananda and I were just talking just before the class, if you look at our wonderful Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, all our scriptures, even Chaitanya Charitamrita, so many stories, there's so many stories of failure. Arjuna, in the first chapter of Bhagavad Gita, he was a failure. Maharaj Pariksit, right? He was cursed. He was a failure. Vyasadeva was depressed because he hadn't properly described the glories of Krishna. He was a failure. Narada Muni had to correct him. The Pandavas, look how many times the Pandavas failed. Prahlad Maharaj was being tortured by his own father. No, right, and Srila Prabhupada, we'll talk about Srila Prabhupada more. So many stories for building character through failure. So this is a very interesting little video that we found on YouTube. This is a picture of a monarch butterfly emerging from a chrysalis. So there's a great struggle involved here, right? This, what was once a little caterpillar crawling on the ground, right, animal of the land, is now in this chrysalis struggling to get out. And that struggle is very, very important for the ultimate goal of being able to fly. And they found that sometimes a little child or some well-meaning person will try to help that butterfly get out. Okay, let me help. You're struggling so much. I'll just peel back those layers for you. And you know what happens? The butterfly's not able to fly after that because that struggle was so essential for building strength in order to fly. So it seems as though this is the way Krishna's designed this world, right? That struggle helps us to be able to come to the point of really flying in our true nature, right? Flying, even you could say as spiritual beings. When we look at children, right? So we met Mirabai this morning. So in a little while, about 2 years, Mirabai is going to start to try to walk, because the ability to walk is innate in human beings. So what will she do? She'll try, and she'll fall, she'll fail, and she'll try. Here he comes. Beautiful, huh? So this baby will try and fall and fail and try again, and eventually she'll be walking, just like it's natural, right? So in the same way, we learn from the Bhakti Shastras that we are Jivatma, we are sacred, eternal, spiritual beings, individual sparks of Krishna's energy, and we have within us, by our own nature, innately, we have the ability to love Krishna. It's innate within our hearts. But we come into this material world with a dual nature. We're not able to fly yet. Okay, back to the beginning, right? So we come into this material world unable to fly. We think of ourselves as creatures of the land. We think of ourselves as creatures of matter. And we've come to play out our little individual God projects, you know, that I can enjoy independently. Who needs Krishna? I can do it alone. So as the Puritans used to say, pride cometh before a fall or a failure. Pride, right? So pride becomes the central pivot of our failure again and again and again. Our pride, we fall because of our pride. So Krishna has given us this freedom to love or to not love. We have the ability to turn back toward love, loving Krishna, loving all living beings who are part of Krishna. This is bhakti. Or we can choose to remain separate, to remain isolated, to continue accepting the status quo of ourselves in the suffering condition in the material world. But by nature, we're meant for a much higher life, just like this butterfly. We're meant for a much higher life. We're meant to fly and dance as Krishna's loving servant. But our failure is when we accept ourselves as less, as matter. So I want to tell you a very interesting story about an African-American woman who was born on the eastern shore of Maryland. Her name was Harriet Tubman. She was born into slavery. Maryland was a slave state at that time. And she was a teenager when there was a life-changing incident that happened to her. The slave driver saw another young girl trying to escape. And he took a brick and he threw it at this girl who was trying to escape, this young slave girl who was trying to escape. And he missed. And he hit Harriet right in the head. And she fell unconscious. And she was in coma for many, many days, I think 19 or 20 days. And her father was a man of deep faith. And her father just kept saying, "I know my daughter will survive. I know my daughter will come back to us." He had deep faith that she would come back. And after all this time in coma, she regained consciousness. And she had a terrible gash to her forehead. And she always wore a scarf after that because to hide this terrible gash that was in her forehead. But when she came out of that suffering condition, she came out of that with a vision. She was given a vision by God that you have a mission to lead your people out of slavery. It's an amazing story. It's a visionary story. So she was in Maryland, and she would go down further into the South to Mississippi, to Alabama, and she led over 1,000 people out of slavery. She took her elderly parents, she took her brothers and sisters, and she was so courageous. But the people who went with her were also so courageous because she would say to them, "There's no turning back. If you try to turn back, I'll have to kill you because then all of us could be lost. They'll find all of us." And she never lost a single person. She never lost a single person. But she said something very, very interesting after this whole experience. She said, "I took 1,000 people out of slavery, but I could have taken another 1,000 out, but they did not know that they were slaves." So they had accepted the narrative that they were slaves. They accepted that life of slavery, of bondage. They did not realize the higher life that was available to them as free men and women. So in the same way, Srila Prabhupada is a visionary world teacher, a great saint, and his determination, his profound humility, his unbreakable faith in Krishna, and the words of his spiritual master, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, these are the secrets of his success. And we, if we have faith in his words and faith in his teachings, we can also come to the place of understanding ourselves as free, loving, eternal servants of Krishna, dancing and in joy. As Prabhupada wrote in his Krishna book, that his students used to be very morose, but now they're dancing like peacocks. So if we take his words seriously, we can also learn that this much higher life for which we are innately qualified is available to us. But if you read the life story of Srila Prabhupada, we have in the hallway, there's a condensed volume. I think it's called Prabhupada, which is a great read if you haven't read it. But it's a condensed version of a 5-volume work called Prabhupada Lilamrita, which is an amazing read. I highly recommend it. The first volume is Prabhupada's life before he came to the U.S., his life in India before coming to the U.S. If you read that book, that volume, it's a story of failure. It's a story of one failure after another, after another, after another. He made so many attempts to serve his Guru Maharaj, to share Krishna consciousness, and he failed again and again. He was rejected by his family as some kind of impractical dreamer. He was even rejected by his godbrothers. He looked like he was getting some footing in Jhansi. Any of you from Jhansi? Oh, someone from Jhansi, yeah. So it looked like he was getting some footing there. He formed what was called the League of Devotees, which was the forerunner of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. He had a building there, and he had some hope. But then the governor gave the building away to his wife to use as a social club. So another failure. He was a respected holy man in Vrindavan, respected scholar in Vrindavan, but at the age of almost 70 years old, he somehow was given free passage on a ship, freighter ship. Can you imagine crossing the Atlantic on a freighter ship? I think we would die. Violent storms, violent seasicknesses, and two heart attacks during that journey. And then he gets to New York, right? Penniless, he was starving. I read once that he said that he would wake up at night from hunger pains. He was starving, he was penniless, and he was living in the rat-infested Bowery of New York. I mean, now you can pay $700 a night for a room at the Bowery Hotel. So we have no idea what it was like then. He would step over drunks and dead bodies to get into his meeting room. And the people he was speaking to, and I was one of them, the cultured people of India would not even sit down or have a conversation or associate with such people. These are the people who were coming to him. Once he said, Krishna has not sent me any first class men. He has only sent me 10th class men. So yes. And what was his mood? What was Srila Prabhupada's mood? And he said this many times if you listen to his lectures. He said, my mood was, let me try to do something. I may be a success or I may be a failure, but let me try. So just to study his life and to see what he did to give us, what he went through to give us the treasure of Krishna consciousness, gives us faith, gives us gratitude, and determination to try as well, to try to overcome our even daily failures. So the next slide. From all I've learned, good one to remember, right? From all I've learned, fail. So it said, we should never walk away from failure. On the contrary, we should study it carefully and imaginatively for its hidden assets. What kind of vision do we need to imbibe from studying Srila Prabhupada's struggles? The fact is, there's no such thing as overnight success. It's actually a myth, because people who are successful have had countless failures, one after another. And failure is the doorkeeper to success. There was a story, I wasn't going to tell this story, but I think I will anyway. I don't like it very much, but it's a story about Picasso. Picasso was in the market one day, and a woman came up to him and said, will you draw my portrait? And he said, of course. And he whipped out, you know, Picasso was quite a flamboyant character. There's one thing he said about himself. He said, I want to live like a poor man, but with lots of money. So he was very flamboyant, bohemian character. So he whips out his paper and his pens, and within a few seconds, sketched a portrait of this lady and handed it to her. And he said, that will be $30,000. You can see why I'm not fond of his character. But he said, that will be $30,000. And she said, $30,000? It took you 30 seconds to do it. And he said, but in order to do it in 30 seconds, it took me 30 years of preparation. So one who's never tried, this is the third slide, right? Doesn't he look like a failure? Albert Einstein, he said, one who has never failed has never tried anything new. I was just telling David Prasta before the class, Einstein, I think I read that he didn't speak till he was 4. They really thought that he was a very stupid child. And even later, when he was developing his brilliant experiments and theories, he really didn't care. He was really very otherworldly. He was a deeply spiritual man. And his wife was also a scientist. She's the one who translated his thought to the world. Otherwise, he really didn't care if anyone understood him or not. But so this is this beautiful quote. So many beautiful quotes from Einstein. If we try, we risk failure. If we don't, we ensure it. Right? It said that tuition, that failure is the tuition that we have to pay for success. And here's a quote from the founder of the Toyota company. Toyota cars, maybe you drive it. Who drives a Toyota? It's not Toyota, actually, Honda. Anybody drive a Honda? Yeah. So the founder of your car company, he said, success is 99% failure. Success is 99% failure. Here's a beautiful quote. This is from Thomas Merton, the great Catholic monk. He says, maybe I'll read this slowly. It's very beautiful. He says, souls are like athletes that need opponents worthy of them if they are to be tried and extended and pushed to the full use of their power. It's very good, isn't it? Thomas Merton. So I want to tell you another story about a man. His fiance died. He failed in business. He had a nervous breakdown. He had lifelong bouts of depression. He finally ran for political office. He lost 8 elections. Who today loses 8 elections? This is the 16th president of the United States, Abraham Lincoln. I don't think anyone would doubt that he was probably the greatest president that this country's ever had. But this is his backstory, right? Tell you another story. Someone named George Marshall, he was the Secretary of State, the Chief of Staff under 3 presidents. He was given the Nobel Peace Prize for his model of restorative justice that he created after World War II. So not punitive justice, which is very much the model today. People just get thrown in prison, just stay there, right? And what's going to happen when you come out, if you come out, right? But he gave another model of restoring Europe. It was visionary, right? It was visionary. It's called the Marshall Plan. You can look him up on YouTube. He was a miserable failure as a student. He was a terrible student. He stuttered, as Bhaktivedanta Swami stuttered, right? He stuttered. His father was extremely disappointed in him. His sister used to tease him that you are the dunce of your class. And he became, after his sister was teasing him like that, he started to become very mischievous and contrary, and he put a frog in her bed. So his spirit was starting to rise, right, from the failure. So he put a frog in his sister's bed. And then the turning point in his biography, he says, the turning point in his life was when he overheard his older brother speaking to his mom. His mom loved him very much. His father really rejected him. But his mother gave him unconditional love. And his older brother was saying to his mom, you know, George is going to bring disgrace to our family if you allow him to enter the military academy where I go to school. So don't allow him to go. It was a very prestigious Southern military academy, Virginia Military Institute. Don't let him go there because he will disgrace us. So when he overheard that conversation, it was such an impetus for him. It changed his whole life. And he said to himself, I'm going to show my brother I'm going to succeed far beyond what he is ever able to do. And he did. It's a fascinating story. There's a quote from Ernest Hemingway where he says, the world breaks everyone. And afterward, some are stronger at the broken pieces. So there's danger to success, actually. Success is very dangerous. Success can lead us to the greatest failure, which is pride. But failure can lead us to the greatest success, which is humility and learning. The greatest failure is pride. Pride is the central vice. It blinds us so that we're not able to see our real, true position as tiny servants of the Supreme Lord. I want to tell you a beautiful story. Sometimes when I tell stories from this asana, I didn't get permission beforehand and I get in trouble afterwards, which is a failure for me. But this time I did ask permission. So this is a story about our dear Palaka Prabhu, who's it was very kind of him to let me tell this story and very humble of him to let me tell this story, because I know, you know, when I think of the mean things I did to people when I was a young devotee, I don't want anyone to know. But so out of his humility and his kindness, he's allowed me to tell this story, which is very instructive. So when he was a young brahmachari, well, he's a big, strong guy now. If you've seen, this is Palaka. Raise your hand. See, even his arm is big and strong. So he's a big, strong guy now. But imagine, how old were you, 20, 19? He was 20 years old. So young guys can be a bit intoxicated with their bodily strength, right? We've all seen it. So they were bringing in a new refrigerator into the Q Street Temple, which was the forerunner of this Potomac Temple, carrying in this big refrigerator. Two guys were on one side. Pushpavan and Loka Guru were on one side. They needed another guy. They really needed two other guys. But so they asked Palaka if he could help them bring this heavy refrigerator into the kitchen. And when he tells this story, when Palaka Prabhu tells the story, he says, into Radharani's kitchen. So he knew who was in charge, right? Or at least he does now. So they're carrying in this refrigerator. He's on one side. And so Palaka says, they ask him, can you help us carry this refrigerator? And he said, I can lift that refrigerator as easily as Krishna lifted Govardhan Hill. In Radharani's kitchen. And immediately, the refrigerator landed on his foot and broke his foot. And the other brahmachari said, are you all right? And still his pride said, yeah, I'm all right, I'm fine. And then, I'm not fine, I need to go to the hospital. So this instructive story is here for us. And out of his kindness and humility, he's allowed. Yes.
Actually, I was holding the refrigerator. Oh. And they said, are you sure you got it? I said, yeah, this is light. It's as easy as Krishna lifting over the house. And it actually was light until I said that. And it was so heavy.
You just see. See Krishna's mystic power. Krishna's Yogeshwara. Yes. So he said, actually, he was feeling it as light. But after he said that, because maybe the other two had most of the weight, but as soon as he said that, it became so heavy that it fell and broke his foot. So yeah, Krishna's Yogeshwar. He can make something light. He can make our obstacles in our lives light as a feather. He can make things very heavy if we're covered in pride, right? So it's a very instructive story. So yeah, there are always these two dogs, as the Native American people say, there are these two dogs fighting within us, the lower self and the higher self. And we always have the choice every minute of the day. Am I going to take up the struggle? Am I going to try to struggle against the lower self? I may fail again and again and again, but am I up for the struggle to do the right thing? To do the right thing, even if I fail, to try again, to listen to the higher voice, to listen to that higher voice of who I am and what I'm meant to do in my much higher life. Right? So this is what humility means. It means to be acutely aware of our weaknesses, to cry to Guru, to Gauranga, to Govinda to help us. And what does the Gita say? Right? If you look at the very last chapter of the Gita, verse 1858, Krishna says, we're looking at the causes of our failure, that I'm thinking I'm the center, that I don't need Krishna. So Krishna says, if you become conscious of me, You will pass over all the obstacles of conditional life by my grace. If, however, you do not work in such consciousness, but act through false ego, not hearing me, you will be lost. So this humility to take shelter of Krishna and the holy teachers is key. Srila Prabhupada says that failure is the pillar of success when we're trying. And if failure is the pillar of this temple of the heart we're trying to build, then humility is the foundation. When he was asked, once Srila Prabhupada was asked, what should be our mood in chanting the holy name? And he opened his heart and gave us a picture of his mood in chanting. He said, please, my dear Lord Krishna, give me strength. I am fallen. I have no strength. Please accept me. I am frail. I am trying, but I am failing. So we need to aspire for this mood that maybe 1 minute ago my mind was wandering while I was chanting and I failed, but let me try again. And if 1 minute from now my mind is flying all over the universe, let me try again. So let me try and try. For ordinary people, failure is failure. For extraordinary people, they learn from failure, they become stronger from failure. So in conclusion, what is the ultimate failure of human life? To live without this kind of spiritual inquiry of who am I, what is my purpose, and to leave this world at the end of life with no knowledge of who I am. After receiving the rare gift of the human form of life, to again enter the cycle of repeated birth and death and leave to wander throughout the universes just like animals going to slaughter. This is the ultimate failure of the human form of life. And what is the real success? To reawaken, to remember, and directly experience, actually, our long-lost reciprocal relationship of loving service with the very Lord of our own hearts in life and in death, by the grace of God, by the grace of great teachers, to understand Krishna in truth and not to ever take birth again. So thank you very, very much. So, do we have any thoughts or comments? Or yes,
you started out with a definition of failure versus success. Like one was the absence of the other. So it was like heat.
Webster's definition.
Yeah, it was like heat versus cold. One is real, and one is really not as real because it's just the absence of the other. But in the end, do you accept that thing? Do you think that one is? What's your conclusion then of the relationship of failure and success?
My conclusion is that we need to redefine success and failure in this country, in this world, because we have a very passionate model. We have fast food and fast cars and fast internet and, you know, wham, bam, fast, right? But what about going deeper? And what about redefining ourselves and becoming wise and understanding who I am? And picking myself up again and again by the grace of my teachers, you know. So I think we need to redefine. And I tried to give the real definition, or Srila Prabhupada's definition at the end of the class. What is the ultimate failure of human life? To again take birth and enter again into the repeated cycle of birth and death. And die like an animal dies going to slaughter without knowledge of who we are. And what's the success? To directly experience in joy and full knowledge who I am and love Krishna, go to Krishna in life and at death. I think we need to redefine. Thank you. That's a great question. Yes.
Thank you, Mataji. Success or failure in this world is measured by milestones or marks, and it's possible to judge it. How do I measure failure of my character? It's very difficult to recognize that and accept it, not just once, but repeatedly.
Thank you. Very, very sincere and beautiful question. If we are humble and cried to Krishna in this mood. We were saying yesterday that the picture that's just behind that wall, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he said that one should chant the holy name in a mood of great distress, not complacently, but beg Krishna, let me see what I'm doing wrong. How can I love you? How can I go to you? Where are my obstacles? Where are my failures? And gain strength through this struggle of humility and crying out to Krishna. I want to read something very, very beautiful then. Listen to this quote. Suffering, oddly, teaches gratitude. In normal times, we treat the love we receive as a reason for self-satisfaction, like a child, right? I deserve to be loved. Everybody loves me, right? So in normal times. But in seasons of suffering, we realize how undeserved this love is and how it should be a cause for thanks, for gratitude, right? These things are so linked, humility and gratitude. One of our teachers, one of our ISKCON gurus, said that without gratitude, there's no question of love, right? So here, but in seasons of suffering, we realize how undeserved this love is and how it should be a cause for thanks. In proud moments, we refuse to feel indebted. But in humble moments, people know they don't deserve the affection and concern they receive. It's beautiful. So yeah, these are deep things, you know, when sometimes it's called the dark night of the soul. When we go to those places that we don't want to go to, those places that we just want to avoid at all costs. And sometimes we hear stories of people who had cancer or some terminal diagnosis, and then the doctors, oh, actually the cancer went away. And the people look back on that time and say, that was the best thing that ever happened to me. That was the best time of my life. I would not be the person I am today if it hadn't been for this accident or this cancer or this tragedy. But we avoid those things like anything. Of course, it's our nature to be enjoying and to be full of bliss and to be full of knowledge, but we have to go through this to reawaken that knowledge of who we are. Are there other questions? Yes.
Hare Krishna Mataji, very inspiring class.
Thank you.
Okay, my question is about, can you just speak about active inertia, like you mentioned in your story, that lady could help more, but they had accepted, and that's how she couldn't help the others, because they had accepted their life. So can you speak on this active inertia, is this also a failure?
Yes, we've accepted the narrative. I can speak for myself, maybe not true of many of you, but I can speak for myself. I fail because I accept the narrative that I'm part of this material world, that I'm American, I'm a woman, I'm such and such age, this is me, I have my limitations. You know, I remember one experience I had. It was at a yoga retreat, and I absolutely cannot stand on my head. I just can't do that. So at this yoga retreat, one of my godbrothers just stood on his head. And I went, what? You know, he's like 60 years old or something, same age as me. And I just went, what? How can he stand on his head? I'm going to stand on my head too. And all of a sudden, I just leaned up against the wall and I stood on my head. I couldn't even believe it. But you can see the power of the mind that we think that I matter. I can't do this. I can't do that. I can't really chant with attention. I have to, the way I chant, well, my mind is flying all over. The way I serve, or the way I, whatever it is, we stick ourselves in the box because we don't have that vision that Srila Prabhupada is trying to paint for us of a much higher life, that you're meant to be in Sangha with Krishna, dancing with Krishna, enjoying with Krishna, in full knowledge of who you are, in this bhakti reciprocation. We accept the narrative that we're slaves of this material world. We've accepted the narrative. I can speak for myself.
Thank you.
Yes. Yes.
What would you say is a proper psychology for dealing with failure in the sense of sometimes when, I think when it happens, the mind is constantly saying that, kind of believing, replaying those messages, and that sometimes the things that we fail at cause us to also slacken in spiritual life. And so it kind of becomes like a cycle that where you mentioned that the greatest success is to not take birth again, but then sometimes when something happens, you know, either at their job or within personal relationships, that has an effect to decline some of my spiritual practices. So what do you think is a proper way to get out of that?
I think all the processes we have in Krishna consciousness, the chanting process is transformative. We don't really have faith in it, or we would take it more seriously. It's transformative. By the process of chanting, actually there's a Sanskrit verse, Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Sadyuka Banoi Shravanadi Sutta Chitta Koreya Udai. That we are, by nature we have the capacity to love Krishna Prema, but by the process of hearing, it can awaken. I would also say to read the lives of great personalities, which we read in Srimad Bhagavatam, and other biographies of great people who've conquered tremendous obstacles. I mean, really, that's more the norm than the exception. You know, people who've conquered immense obstacles to become the people that they've become. You know, and those stories are there in the Gita, the Bhagavatam, and elsewhere. And just to have faith. We lack faith, actually, in the process. You know. And there's the beautiful prayer that's recommended that when we come before the deities, we should say every day. My dear Lord Krishna, my dear Lord Ram, my dear Lord Chaitanya, for so many long years I've been suffering in this material world, but from today, in other words, I failed every moment until this moment when I'm standing before you, and from today, I am surrendering unto you. Please engage me in your service. And actually, in the Ramayana, Lord Ramachandra says that anyone who says that to him, he will accept them, even Ravana. Even if Ravana said that, he would accept Ravana. So I failed every minute until coming before Krishna and saying that prayer. And I may fail again after saying that prayer, but again, I'll come and say that prayer. From this day, I am yours. I am yours. You take charge of me. And then what happens when you ask Krishna to take charge of you? It's like the bicycle rider holding onto the back of the truck. Have you seen that in New York? It's scary, right? He's riding a bike, and he holds onto the back of the truck, which is going 40 or 50, whatever it is in New York, and all of a sudden that velocity. So that's what it's like to take shelter of higher power. Yes?
Just one comment.
Thank you for your story so much.
Anyway,
and your example.
It's a bad example. Never compare yourself to Krishna. That's the lesson to be learned, especially in Radharani's kitchen.
But now we want to compare ourselves to the devotion of Palaka, who's made so many years of advancement since that day.
Anyway, but that's another story. But from the material point of view, everyone has this success, you know, the great American success story. But from the Christian, which is this is a Christian nation, Jesus teaches that what value is it if you gain the whole world, but still you lose your soul? So you could become materially the most successful person in the world, but you know there's so many on the flip side of that. There's so many people. Howard Hughes, I mean, there's a guy who was phenomenally successful, and yet he died the most miserable person in the world.
Right.
He died in a hotel room. Naked, would you know, put his feet in Kleenex boxes, and he had more money than practically anybody.
Right. The Bible also says, lay not your treasures where moth and dust corrupt. So these are the instructions of all the wisdom books from every culture. But we think, oh, that's old stuff. We want fast, you know, we want new and fast. This is our ignorance.